creates an impediment to the most basic democratic practice as citizens.
Voter ID requirements shot down at the Capitol and finding forgiveness at the library. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell, filling in for Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. The legislature adjourned Sunday without acting on a bill adding new voter identification requirements, but the measure is poised for action when lawmakers return to the Capitol next January. House Bill 3 was strongly opposed by a number of Southeast leaders, including lawmakers and Native officials. It passed out of the House Judiciary Committee last week, but it remained in the Rules Committee, the last stop before bills go before the full chamber. At one of the measure's final hearings, Alaska Native Brotherhood Grand Camp President Bill Martin said a photo ID requirement could keep people from casting ballots.
There are many people who are my age group that actually don't have ID cards. And the ID card is not required when we go for health care at search or to vote in our tribal elections because we have our own cards. There's no picture on them.
Tlingit Haida Central Council, the House Bush Caucus, Juneau's legislative delegation, and some other groups also opposed the legislation. Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 70 President Jan Trigg went a step further. She said the measure discriminates against rural Alaskans and others.
It creates an impediment to the most basic democratic practice as citizens. The homeless, the homebound, returning veterans, the elderly, people of color, and college students would all be vulnerable to this new law.
The voter ID bill was praised by Travis Lewis, vice president of the group Alaskans for Alaska. He said weak laws have inflated voter rolls in his hometown of Elfin Cove. And he said proper identification is easy to get.
As a veteran, I want to say that when I got out of the military, I had all kinds of ID on me. It's pretty hard for me to understand in this day and age how a person could not have proper identification.
Sponsor Bob Lynn of Anchorage said his bill gives voters several options, including presenting no ID and casting a question ballot.
Nothing in this bill would restrict anybody who's currently registered to vote and motivated to vote from voting, wherever they live in the state, whether it's in an urban area, rural area, on an island, or wherever.
No companion legislation was introduced in the Senate. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium replaced its chief operating officer earlier this month. On Friday, April 5th, it was announced to staff that Susan Labus would no longer be working at Search. The following Monday, her replacement was on the job. Labus had been with Search since November 2011 and had about a year and a half left on her contract. An email to Search staff announcing the transition offered no details on her departure. Search Chief Executive Charles Clement said in a separate message that offering any further details about it would violate the organization's personnel policy. Clement was unavailable for a full interview. Labus also could not be reached for comment. The new Chief Operating Officer, meanwhile, brings with him a history of work with struggling healthcare organizations. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
His name is Dan Neumeister.
I've been given no agenda to do any kind of radical transformation of Search. What I've been asked to do is come in and make some positive changes to help it be successful.
Neumeister served as interim hospital administrator at the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage from 2009 to 2010. A statement issued by Search credits Neumeister with transforming a $6 million loss in 2008 into a $3 million surplus the following year.
We didn't do drastic things up at ANMC, and we were able to turn it around and provide great quality care and provide the recruitment efforts we needed to. And when I left, the organization was moving in the right direction, and I don't think you don't see a lot of scar tissue from that process. In fact, I think you see a lot of people that were pretty pleased with the leadership I provided there.
Neumeister runs his own healthcare management consulting business. His resume includes a variety of assignments at hospitals and healthcare organizations. Sometimes it's to fill the gap between permanent executives, and sometimes it's to help an organization dig out of financial trouble or restructure its operations. He also spent 9 years as an executive with Enloe Medical Center in Chico, California. Local news reports from the end of his time at Enloe in 2006 say Neumeister made changes that put the hospital on better financial footing and that he was backed by the hospital's leadership. But those same reports say he had fallen out of favor with doctors. The Chico News and Review reports a majority of the hospital's anesthesiologists resigned after contract negotiations broke down.
Let me ask you this question. Have you ever had to make a tough decision that you knew was going to be the right thing for the organization, but put yourself at risk? And as hospital CEOs, that's what you do sometimes. If you act with integrity, there's sometimes tough decisions you have to make that you know you're going to put perhaps your career at risk at that organization, but you're doing it for the right reason for that.
Neumeister resigned from Enloe about a month after the hospital's medical staff voted no confidence in him. The board chairman, vice chairman, and quality chairman also resigned within weeks.
Because what they were really saying is, we asked Dan to do this, and we are supportive of what he did. And yes, we know there's some little bit of chaos going on in the town, but it really... I feel good about how I left that organization when I left it.
If Neumeister's more recent career includes a series of hospitals and healthcare organizations in the middle of changes, Search certainly fits that profile. Heading into 2012, Search Chief Executive Charles Clement told employees that the organization had a $4 million budget shortfall and that difficult decisions were on the way in the next year. Search changed employee benefits, privatized its billing department, and cut back on expenses such as travel. Then came federal budget cuts, also known as sequestration, bracing for a reduction in federal money of up to $3.5 million a year. Officials announced in March the closure of the Bill Brady Healing Center, a residential drug and alcohol treatment program. It is scheduled to shut its doors at the end of this month.
I wouldn't say Search is on life support. I would just say that Search is doing some restructuring to its operations.
Neumeister says he thinks Search's strengths lie in having good employees and in widespread coverage through clinics and facilities across Southeast Alaska. As for weaknesses,
where we just have to look at is how we're running the operations. Are we being consistent? Are we eliminating variability? Sometimes, for instance, is every clinic run the same or is it run differently? Where can we take similarities and run things identically the same where it makes sense? Now, there's some areas won't be run the same. But what you find out is sometimes is as organizations grow over time, they don't pull back and look and say, how do we really need to have two different divisions doing the same thing? Or can we maybe bring people together? It doesn't necessarily mean a loss of a job. It really just means how can we make things run a little bit more efficiently and more productively.
At the time of our interview, Neumeister had been on the job a week. He says he'll spend the next 90 days or so learning more about Search's operations and then start looking for changes to make. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Bronco.
It's known at libraries around the country as National Library Week, but to a lot of patrons, it's better remembered as Find Forgiveness Week. Through the 20th, the Haines Library is joining others nationwide in celebrating those places of lending, reference, and reading.
I feel like the library is useful for the community. It's really appreciated in communities, and it's just a good week for everybody to get reminded of that and kind of experience it a little bit more, and even us to give a little bit more out with the music and the extra programs.
Librarian aide Jedediah Blum-Evitt says, for you, that means special events throughout the week. And yes, the long-awaited fine pardon.
It's fine forgiveness. People get excited about that one. So we are forgiving late fees for items, not if anybody's lost something or damaged something or any of that, but late fees for items. You just have to come in with your card and in person. You can't do it for somebody else, but we're happy to forgive your fines for those things all week long, as long as the staff are here. So not mine, it's just volunteers.
Haynesboro Public Library on 3rd Avenue has festivities for each day of the week. The full schedule is at haineslibrary.org and posted around town.
Well, there's something happening each day. Part of that is Music in the Stacks, which is during the lunch hour. So noon to 1, we have a different artist or artists coming in to play and or sing. People can bring bag lunches and sit in the back room back there in the big open windows.
Alita Atkins was on piano Monday.
And then we've got Chad Clark and his daughters coming in on Tuesday, and Len Feldman's playing on Wednesday. Thursday, we've got Howell's Pals, which is Scott Pierce and some of his friends. And then Liz Morant Falvey on Friday.
Patrons can enter a raffle each day of the week they check out an item. A magazine tree shows current library magazine subscriptions that are in need of sponsorship. And evening programs include an annual meeting Tuesday, e-reader demonstration Wednesday, and game night Thursday.
We've got an extra suggestion box out. We're just trying to drum up as much interest as we can, whatever you guys are interested in. We've gotten lots of suggestions so far for movies and books we should add to the collection, but we're also open to program ideas and anything like that.
Haynesboro Public Library is open Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and 12:30 to 4:30 over the weekend. However, staff hours end earlier during the week. Clukwan School Library is open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturday, 10 to noon. Skagway Library is open 3:30 to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 1 to 5 p.m. Saturday at the school. The April book discussion through the Skagway Library is The Art of Racing in the Rain by Seattle author Garth Stein, Monday, April 29th at 7 p.m. For KHNS, this is Tara Bicknell in for Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Ed Schoenfeld and Ed Ronco for their contributions to this report.